This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Excellent. OK, weather today, highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 1 degree centigrade. It's going to be a cloudy and mild morning in Lincoln with outbreaks of rain, but there could be drier weather with sunny spells in the afternoon. How does that fit with your own weather forecast, Professor Jane Chapman?
Well, actually, it's their summer here, as you
yes,
know. It's
yeah.
not as good as it should be, in my view. We have had some lovely hot days, and the sun comes out almost every day. But there's been a bit of rain overnight, mm-hmm. and a few showers, mm-hmm. and cloud as well.
So you see,
it's sunny and cloud.
It's just
and about
like
27 centigrade.
Well, you see, apart from the 27 degrees centigrade, just like Lincoln, basically, just about 17 degrees higher. So no difference whatsoever. It's excellent. In the studio, originally from New Zealand, we have our Level 1 journalist, Jessica Ward. Jessica, I hope you'll forgive Professor Chapman for actually being in Australia as opposed to New Zealand, because I know you're quite sort of fond of the New Zealand-Australian balance here.
It's all right. They're just our bigger brother, that's all.
OK, we'll get that sorted through from that perspective. Moving on... we have you here. I mean, if we actually read out all of your qualifications, Jane, it would be... we'd actually sort of wrap up the whole programme, basically. We wouldn't have time for Richard Fitzwilliams or anything else from that sort of point of view. But I think
I'm not sure about that.
Oh, I don't know. But in terms of your work at Macquarie University in Sydney, a visiting professor there, and presumably, just as last night we concluded the midweek drive with a full input from Andy Kerr. Young Andy, of course, doing fantastic stuff, his first ever show, and he was very excited to talk about the work he's been doing with your good self, vis-a-vis this comics project, Comics and the World Wars, a cultural record. Is that part of the reason you're over in Macquarie at this moment in time?
Yes, it is part of the reason.
Good.
Yeah. We've got an exhibition of some of our findings on the First World War, which is happening at the public art gallery there. And I've given one public talk already about our First World War research on the Comics Project, and I'm giving another one next Thursday. And both of those have been videoed, and they will eventually be on YouTube. So I'm doing that, and then I'm developing some new projects with various people at Macquarie as well.
Impact, of course, is the word that seems to be ever-present yes. through these early decades of the 21st century. Obviously, impact 100 years ago had a much different meaning in terms of our chaps and the troops and all the rest of the bits and pieces. But we're fascinated in terms of some of the things you've discovered from your research into this, including early social networking by the men in the troops as well. Not obviously with their mobile phones and text messages and tablets and so on, but actually in creating their own comics.
Yes. Well, they created their own newspapers, and they were very common. I mean, there were hundreds of them, all the nationalities, you know, including the Germans, the French. The French had 400. The Australians had about 250. The Canadians were even more prolific. And, of course, the British led the field as well. There's been a BBC Two drama on this called The Wiper's Time. If anybody saw it. But in The Wiper's Times, they didn't do cartoons. Now, what we've been looking at is the newspapers made by the soldiers from the trenches at the time that had cartoons or multi-panel cartoons in them. If it's more than one panel, then we can classify it as a comic strip. But they didn't make complete comic books, you know, and they were begging and borrowing materials.
They were in the middle of a war. Yeah. They can't actually sort of just say, hang on a minute, hold on a second here. We've got to actually sort of do some creativity. Understandable. Jessica, thoughts and questions from yourself.
I'm just wondering how the process went. How did they manage to get the newspapers to the soldiers and...
distribution.
Yeah. Do you know much about that?
Well, it varied. I know about that. It varied. They, if they could beg and borrow a printing press, which was feasible in some cases, like on the Western Front, the towns that had been occupied by the Germans, you know, there were print works closed down and printing presses had been abandoned. So that was one possibility. If they are on a boat, because a lot of the New Zealanders and the Australians, less so the Canadians, they had a shorter journey. They actually made their own newspapers on the boat for the journey for, you know, their fellow troops. And then what they could do is have it printed at the next port of call. And in some cases, the newspapers were backed by the authorities. The authorities, you know, the army management gave them help, in which case they could go to professional print works or be sent back to London and then sent back to the front. And the men would actually subscribe to these. They'd have it docked from their pay, the cost of buying the newspaper. And some of them had quite big circulations, like 20,000 or more. And came out monthly, some came out fortnightly. Others didn't last long, and they were very DIY, makeshift, you know, done by hand and this kind of thing. So there was a whole range, but everybody liked to write, they liked to read, they liked to produce, they liked to collect things. So also they liked the idea that they could take something back home with them or have it posted to their folks back home, so that they, you know, they there was a souvenir of the war. But it was primarily to entertain them, to entertain each other.
Well, exactly. And we can't talk about sending home without censorship, but that's another story for another issue, another series.
Oh, well, they didn't really censor these much, you see. Oh. They didn't much, because by and large, the content was gossip and stories and entertainment and this kind of thing.
A bit like fanzines, perhaps.
Drawings. Yeah, and the point being that the soldiers used to have their own jokes and their own culture, and they would moan to each other about conditions. And the management could read this, and then they would know what was going on. So it was one way of finding out what the men thought and nipping any problems in the bud before they knew to me.
It sounds as though that could be adopted by the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society as a way of keeping staff happy. Jane, we've been joined by two fine folk from the Lincolnshire Events Centre. We have Assistant Marketing Officer Chloe Middleton, no relation to Kate Middleton, in case you ask, but she's from Leicester. How are you, Chloe?
I'm well, thank you, Alex.
And we also have making her debut on the whole production, the Education and Communications Officer for the Lincolnshire Events Society. That would be, of course, the wonderful Rosemary Cruss. How are you, Rosemary?
I'm okay, thank you.
Brilliant. Okay, we'll come to you in a few seconds, but Jared Johnson, level one journalist, wanting to do serious journalism, etc. You couldn't wish to have a finer sort of soul than Jane Chapman when it comes to serious, hard-hitting news and journalism and so on. Any questions for Jane while she's over in Australia?
Yeah, hello, Jane. I was just wondering how you kind of started this whole study off. I mean, what made you want to study comics
in the First World War and beyond?
Yeah, well, it all started off with cartoons. I had a PhD student at Lincoln who was looking at cartoons for the Boer War. And when I realized there was a shortage in the history of cartoons produced in newspapers, I've kind of then moved from that to comic strips. And that coincided with comic studies being a new field for academic study, a kind of branch of media and journalism, I suppose, and in some cases of graphic art or art history as well, or literary studies. And then, of course, the graphic novel took off in popularity. And then there was academic journals that were being started. So I thought, well, this is a new area that looks like it needs some research. So we spent, myself and one other, 18 months actually researching it and preparing a funding application. So I've been living with this now for almost 6 years, I suppose. It's become a way of life.
Well, it's the only way forward. Now, I know, Jane, we already provisionally booked you to return to the studios because it's been far too long since you've been on the show. So we look forward to that when you make your way back.
I do as well.
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
Love it.
So great.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, Jessica Ward is going to put those last two questions to you, even though she's originally from New Zealand, you're in Australia. She can cope, I think. It's okay. She's living in the Isle of Man these days, Jane. So all's well with the world. Jessica.
Oh,
Hi, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today on the midweek drive?
I have indeed, and it's been way too short.
We've got to fit in Richard Fitzwilliams. We have a feature on liver transplants coming up with King's College Dr. Varuna Aluvarahar. Ray, Ian Lennox is with us. Graham Hafter, a BAFTA award-winning solo is with us. William Sidwell. Plus, of course, heaps and heaps of stuff on the Lincolnshire Showground, countryside links and much more with Chloe. So much to squeeze
this
in, Jane.
On.
This is the whole thing. Next question, please.
Will we be hearing from you soon?
Well,
I hope so. I think I've got lots more to talk about.
Absolutely. In fact, if we look at the dates, if people in the ever-growing global Professor Jane Chapman fan club wish to actually take a note from that point of view, I think we're looking for when you return in March, you will be back on the Midweek Drive.
That sounds great. I look forward to it, Alex.
Excellent.
Thank you.
I wonder why we followed Professor Jane Chapman from Macquarie University in Sydney, Australia, with Men at Work from Down Under. Go figure. It's coming up to 15 and a half minutes past 8 a.m. on Siren 107.3 FM. And before we turn to our ace correspondent and film critic and general all-round superlative fan of the Oscars and more, that will be Richard Fitzwilliams, we'll formally welcome Rosie Crust, full name there, to the studio, Education and Communication Officer for the Lincolnshire Event Centre, the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. There's so much good stuff coming on and happening. Rosie, how are you finding this wonderful sort of experience as part of the team?
It's really great. I mean, I started 3 weeks before the Lincolnshire Show, and then I've come in as the Education Officer, so to promote and educate about food farming in the countryside. So we've got a real packed programme full of events for
Amelia
children and
Chambers
families.
Has been consistently singing your praises and throughout the whole base, to such an extent that I think, you know, I mean, as well as obviously Chloe Middleton needing to have that pay raise, I think I'll put in a sort of line for yourself as well.
Oh, thank you, Alex.
It's true. Because we know Amelia does fantastic work there, as does Jane Southall, of course, and the whole sort of team from that point of view. But fundamentally, it's Chloe and Rosie who keep the whole thing going. Anyway, that's some observations. There we are. Chloe, we'll be talking about Countryside Links in a few moments. This is a really exciting... It's a new event, isn't it, in terms of an Easter special that's sort of coming through, and it's kind of more than just a kind of mini Lincolnshire show. It's a really exciting event on Sunday, the 29th of March, Palm Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Yeah, it is a new event this year that we're organising. It's actually Rosie's baby, so when she came into... her position at the society.
Then, yeah.
Yep, this is her biggie. So you've been working really hard to
falconry displays, the Lincolnshire Lincoln Longwood sheep, the Easter egg hunt. All this we'll be talking about. Richard, we can't keep you waiting any further because I know you're bursting with excitement over the Academy Awards ceremony. We put you in touch with our colleagues at Los Angeles and Chilapack Hollywood, of course, with Phil Leonis and Dean Hagland, who had a somewhat sceptical overview of the actual ceremony. Good morning, first and foremost. How are you?
I look back with a great deal of fondness about, it's terrific, isn't
No, surely that was the Brits last night. That was the greatest show on earth because you had Madonna in a cape falling off a stage. Nothing could beat that.
It's very sad when that happens. Jennifer Lawrence, remember?
But she'd been in the Hunger Games. You know, she's got an excuse for wardrobe malfunctions. You know, mind you, Madonna has worn Jean Paul Gaultier pointy bras. So, you know, who knows? Chloe, the Academy Awards or the Brits? Have you seen either? Have you caught any of the bits and bobs?
Yeah, I've caught bits and bobs of the Academy Awards.
Okay,
and then Rosie was watching.
It's very difficult, if not impossible, to avoid seeing some of it. I mean, the Academy actually boasts of a billion who see, at least some of the shows. So this is the greatest show on the earth. It's the oldest ceremony. It really, really has impact. I mean, there's no doubt at all there were a lot of faults in this year's, in pretty well all years.
Yes, but was it really a fault that, as was commented, Chris Pine, of course, Captain James T. Kirk from the new incarnation of Star Trek, seemed to have an eye line which pointed directly at the middle section of Jennifer Lopez?
One remembers so fondly several outfits.
and what about
over the years? I mean, the problem, I think, was Neil Patrick Harris, and this was extraordinary because he's a...
Had he lost the room, though, Richard? I mean, was it a case of, as both Phil Leonis and Dean Hagland said, had Neil Patrick Harris as a host, as a compere, as an MC, had he lost the room? So ultimately, when he tried to get the audience on his side, they weren't having any of it.
Well, the answer is yes, and the trouble is he knew it, and once it dawned on him, and it was so obvious to us, you could see this expression. This is what was so annoying. There'd be some gag or other, and he'd be waiting to see how it was received, but suspected that it wouldn't go down. Well, all of this was visible on his face. That's the trouble. He lost confidence. And apart from that, there was some pretty risible script writing, quite frankly. I mean, some of what was going on in the aisles, which was supposed to be funny. Something about the magic trick at the end with the briefcase and Viola Davis and so on. I mean, the point is, if you haven't seen the ceremony, the main thing, I think, to celebrate is the fact that some superb movies were in contention. Birdman versus Boyhood, I was a...
And Birdman won.
Birdman 1, and I thought both of them were superb. Mm-hmm. I was very sorry, and this is one of the sad things. I heard Will Gompertz, the BBC Arts Correspondents broadcast from the Oscars, and do you know, he had about 2 or 3 minutes, and Boyhood wasn't mentioned.
Yeah, well, we don't Richard, we don't talk about losers. You know, Birdman, you know, Boyhood, all right, 9 years in the filmmaking. Anyway, it got Best Supporting Actress for Patricia Arquette.
You know, yes, and of course, the speeches, I mean, there you did have passion, and there's little doubt that I think they were extremely good. She really put the boot in when it came to the male domination of America.
Okay.
I mean, the pay differentials and so on.
Okay, Richard, let's just step away from that for a moment, because I'm going to actually throw in another little suggestion here. Just as the American football, which again is designed as to be the best show on earth, etc., American football has started having sessions and performances at Wembley Stadium, I think, and I'm going to run this past Rosy Crest at this moment, what about Lincolnshire Event Centre putting in a bid for next year's Academy Awards?
Oh, I think that's a brilliant idea, Alex, yeah.
I just thought, you know, the world would then come to Lincoln. It's from Los Angeles to Lincoln, Lincoln to Los Angeles. The connections are there. Just thought I'd bowl it out. We're getting nods in the studio, Richard, so I think from the point of view of Lincoln folk, it's a goer. Okay?
I'm not so sure. But I mean, just to mention some highlights very briefly, because I know that time-wise, we don't have the...
we don't have much.
And Dean had. I mean,
if you'd like an hour, we'll give you it, but not today, Richard. Okay.
Well, yes, but the common on John Legend. I mean, there's no doubt that the piece from Selma, the song Glory, there's absolutely no doubt that was the centerpiece of the evening, because the Academy were very, very embarrassed because of the way in two categories that Selma had been snubbed. There's absolutely no doubt that the injustice for me was, I've seen Selma twice now, David Yellow's superlative performance as Martin Luther King, and it didn't even get a nomination. I mean, that was ridiculous. There's also no question that there were some very good speeches. Graham Moore winning for best screenplay for The Imitation Game, and that was not the best screenplay, but his speech where he talked about how he'd attempted suicide for being different, it was a very moving moment. And I liked Alessandro González Iñárritu's plea for the recognition of the achievements of Mexican immigrants in the United States, because the year before, his counterpart Alfonso Cuarón had won for Best Director for Gravity. So that, too, I think, added to the evening's impact. And The Sound of Music, 50 years... Oh, no, let's cheer. I mean...
Well, Lady Gaga singing
Lady
Gaga, The Hills Are Alive. Without
and
wearing meat.
Dame Julie Andrews, so good to see her. I mean, that brought back fond memories. Mm. Really,
and possibly,
I mean, there was a great deal to admire.
Indeed.
A few outrageous frocks, and indeed, there were some rather super numbers.
And let's be honest, Richard, in the presence of Zoe Saldana and Chris Pine, and of course Benedict Cumberbatch, clearly the subtext was Star Trek Into Darkness should have actually received at least 2 nominations, even though it was a couple of years ago. Just a thought. Let's move on. Chloe, any thoughts in terms of what Richard's been saying there? Do you agree? Do you think, yes, it worked well? Were there any particular sort of outfits that you thought, yes, I think I'll wear that to the office next week?
Yeah, I don't think I'll be popping Rita Ora's number on that she wore for the after party. Not a lot to that one. I don't know if I'll go down Lady Gaga's route of a bit
well,
of a
not quite hers, but how about to name some of the ones I thought that were beautifully, beautifully attired. Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore, bit I would say a bit chronologically gifted for Chloe and Rosie and Jessica.
Well, Scarlett Johansson. I mean, they're an accessory.
Right. Okay, okay. So, Scarlett Johansson. I mean, you know, our action.
The Green Guard. Oh, beautiful. Emma Stone too looked so well.
Yeah, Jessica. Any of those sort of catch your particular eye?
Well, I haven't seen the dresses
because she's too busy playing
netball.
Exactly. This is the whole.
Discover it on some form of iPlayer because I mean it is really worth.
There is only one iPlayer, not some form of iPlayer. You can use YouTube as well, of course. That's some form.
Well, yes, indeed. And Felicity Jones, oh, yes, I like
that. Richard, you've eulogised enough. I'm going to have to sort of press the cancel Oscar button one more time here.
Yes, no, we cannot, of course, go into all the details, other than the fact that, yes, I think it was poorly scripted. I think we had a dud host, but I do think that the ceremony meant a lot. It's
all right, can I be controversial again? How about a campaign to bring back Ricky Gervais?
I'm not even commenting.
All right, I would like
someone there.
Okay.
I mean, with the
Anton Deck.
Presence of Billy Crystal or Steve Martin. Yeah. Or
as I said, Anton Deck.
Yes, I mean,
get them over, and then they could have subtitles for the people in America who would find it difficult understanding their quaint northeastern accents.
I can see that. What did you think of the Oscars? You haven't told us.
Well, I tended to share what Phil Leonis has actually said in many ways. I do think we are in just award season. It's prizes for everything now. I mean, look.
What do you mean prizes for
everything? Points and awards.
I mean, not apart from one gong, get anything. And yes, well, the prizes for everything. I think that we could have a real tussle on that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure we will.
Girl, I could bring up Nightcrawler, I could bring up Mr. Turner, I could bring up Foxcatcher.
Yes, but the very fact that they were not nominated is a prize in itself, I feel, in the case of Mr. Turner.
Because the Oscars is, well, it is the greatest show on earth, and because there is such a cachet from that point of view, yes. But there have been ties. There have been two in Oscars history, to my knowledge. The last, as I remember, but was between Katharine Hepburn and Barbara Streisand in the 1960s for Best Actress.
Jared, any thoughts on the Oscars?
I think it's a really interesting debate to see whether you have someone controversial to host it or people like Anton Deck, who I don't think would ever spark controversy.
For your North American audience there.
Well, yes, the ratings, I mean, obviously they are somewhat obsessed by that, and, well, you can understand why. But if you get the Ricky Gervaises, you get ego taking over, and that is a real problem too.
Possibly, possibly Dean Haglund and Phil Leonis could host it next year. I'll put that in, even though Dean's heading off to Australia. That's a
very, very interesting archive footage from previous ceremonies as well.
Especially the sort of the acceptance speech or rejection speech when Marlon Brando wasn't there and couldn't actually receive his award.
Well, that was absolutely priceless.
And of course,
and Vanessa Redgrave, precisely when she attacked Zionist hoodlums and Paddy Chayefsky,
and his rebuttal of that,
1970s, yes.
Exactly. Rosie, are you losing interest now? Because I am, to be honest. You know, so if you are, just say that word, because ultimately we can only, and Richard takes it all in good heart, because ultimately we can only do so much on the Oscar scenario.
In which case we have to move to Jennifer Aniston.
Well, let's.
Now, she is longing for you to see her in Cake.
It's not a fantasy I must admit I've had in many ways, seeing Jennifer Aniston in Cake, but no, the movie, of course. Carry on.
No, well, the movie, I mean, it was released in America just in time for the Globes. And, I mean, there's no question that she does give a good performance. I mean, if you've seen her in Horrible Bosses 2, and I know you want to discuss that in a great deal.
Amazing that hasn't received an Oscar nomination, or Horrible Bosses 1, actually. Astounding, really.
Well, you're right.
She's
there.
A dentist, for God's sakes.
We can agree. But, I mean, there's no question that she is playing an extremely challenging role as a woman who's been involved in a dreadful car accident. She survived. It killed her child. It left her in chronic pain, and it left her also somebody who's extremely pretty acerbic anyway, with a very destructive outlook. And you can see the way the character, in inverted commas, copes, but equally the effect it has on others. The problem with this movie is that whereas Aniston does undoubtedly show that she has got a great deal still to show us, if I may use that phrase, the facts are that it isn't that interesting a story. We meet her first at a support group where she's extremely rude, but also she, having been a shit, thrown out of it, but equally one of its members has committed suicide, and she becomes fascinated by her. Nina, who's whose sad death has been reported, Nina is played by Anna Kendrick, and she keeps reappearing as a ghost. Now, that, I'm afraid, didn't work for me. The problem is a lot of this movie is, it's done well enough, but it isn't done well enough to interest you and hold you. So good performance from Jennifer Aniston, and there's no question it does show she can add a great deal more depth, much more than we've seen, but there's a certain slowness to this. It's obvious that she's been involved in it.
Richard, it's only 1 hour, 42 minutes long. You know, it can't be that slow. And it's also got Felicity Huffman in it, so, you know, marvellous stuff.
Yes, very, very fleetingly, I'm afraid.
No, well, never mind. So it's a kind of, not really sure about Cake, but what do we think of the studio? On the basis of what Richard has said, Chloe Middleton, would you be checking out Cake?
Absolutely.
Oh, see, Kate, she lies so well, as Chloe. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
Like any kind of cake, Alex.
2014, right? Sometimes, Richard, you just be despair about that sort of thing. And Rosie, Cake, with Jennifer Aniston.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we'll be watching. Yeah.
I'm not sure whether I'll actually take that as actually sort of gospel truth.
I mean, the thing that take, you know, I mean, if you like Jennifer Aniston, you certainly see a new.
It's defined by the Daily Mail as a career-defining performance for Jennifer.
Yes, I know that is a wonderful phrase, and it's
career-defining.
Career-defining, it shows that she can do a great deal more than we've seen, but also it doesn't develop supporting characters, including a wonderful brief appearance by the wonderful William H. Macy. Yeah. And what's he doing there? We see him fleetingly for seconds, and he doesn't reappear.
Like Jared Johnson's appearances on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, but he's more than a cameo today. Would you go and see Cake with Jennifer Aniston?
I'm not sure.
Not sure.
But I would. But no. I can see that there'd be a big attraction with Jennifer Aniston.
Clearly, I mean, she was in Friends.
You wouldn't really be missing that much, but it is.
Don't oversell it, Richard.
Yeah.
You know, it's all right. I'm not setting up a campaign to get Jennifer hosting the Oscars next year.
I must give a mention to Adriana Barraza, who's her unfortunate maid and who has to suffer her various tantrums. Oh. The tantrums are, of course, because she's in perpetual pain. It's directed by Daniel Bamps. It's not a bad movie, but it's a pretty good performance.
And
but it could have been much better.
In the immortal words of the aforementioned Daily Mail, Jennifer Aniston arrived at the Oscars despite the snub, as she said, despite being overlooked by the Academy for her role in Cake, probably because they thought it was some kind of chocolate sort of scenario there.
Well, you know, if you keep quoting what the papers say about the Oscars, do you know that the Telegraph had a whole page which was dealing with whether or not Meryl Streep would win again, when it was perfectly obvious,
but she was there, and as Phyllis alluded to in terms of one of the comments at the actual show of the Oscars, it's amazing who you see at the Oscars. Look, there's Meryl Streep. Well,
yes,
she's an actress. Why wouldn't she be there?
The 19th nomination, I mean, obviously devoted to her. The problem is that if you actually nominate someone for a performance as bad as she was in the Into the Woods, I mean,
Richard, please don't get me started on Into the Woods. It has starred Anna Kendrick and Christopher Pine, so let's just say it was a wonderful movie. Okay, if we keep on going, Richard, we'll be at the 88th annual event before we know where we have it, and let's just hold fire on that.
If you get to Citizen 4, you'll have to get serious.
Okay, Jessica.
This is a really powerful documentary. Directed by Laura Poitras, it won for Best Documentary.
Richard, I'm going to have to hold you there with Citizen 4 and say we'll hold that until next week, because time has eluded you and we need to go on to talk about liver transplants, which is very serious.
Oh.
So, Jessica, last two questions, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephone link with us today, Richard?
No, Alex.
I know.
Oh.
I know. So, after all these years. Anyway, carry on.
And will we be hearing from you soon?
I think so. I do hope so. You know, he may allow it.
Richard Fitzwilliams will return. We'll get a Fitzwilliams special before too long, I'm sure. If we do it at Chilpack Hollywood, we'll do it with Richard Fitzwilliams. There we are. We salute you. And in the words of Christopher Cross, as far as the Oscar ceremony is actually concerned, really, is that the best that you can do?
Once in your life you find her, someone who turns your heart around, and next thing you know you're closing.